The focus on climate change often gets down to numbers, like how to reduce the level of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. Several groups say we'd be at a manageable level at 350 parts per million of carbon in the atmosphere. We're consistently over 400 now. Other numbers enter the picture, like the 7 billion people who now occupy the planet. If the Earth strains with 7 billion, how will it do with the projected 9 billion seen for later this century? Our next guest works at reducing the growth of population through a couple of different projects, including the Venture Strategies for Health and Development, which is a California-based nonprofit. Alicia Graves is the vice president of the population program there and is also the co-founder of the OASIS Initiative at the University of California, Berkeley. We'll talk now to Alicia Graves. Alicia, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning, Jeffrey. Thank you for having me.
So at Venture Strategies for Health and Development, the project is called the Rebirth of Population Awareness. Did we lose focus on population growth, if that it needs a rebirth?
I think that we did. As some of your listeners will know, there was a lot of attention to this. There was a book that came out in the late 60s, The Population Bomb. And I think that some of the projections put forth around the in the late 60s and 70s didn't come true. So people, some people tended to dismiss it, but we really need to get it back on the world agenda. There are about 83 additional people added to the Earth each year. That's more than there were being added at the time of that book. It's also I just did the calculation. It's the population of, it's like adding an additional California and Oregon to the Earth every year. So we need to be able to care for those additional people and make sure that there are sufficient resources. And I'm afraid that we won't be able to do that for much longer.
You're right that when Pearl Ehrlich wrote The Population Bomb in the 60s, he had some rather dire predictions, including mass famine and perhaps wars over water and food, which haven't come to pass quite like that. But so I mean, was there a little bit of a slowing of the momentum? I mean, has the population growth rate in the world stabilized at all? Are we slowing down at all?
The population growth rate actually has slowed in the last, probably in the last 5 to 10 years. I think that we added the last 1 billion people to the Earth in about 13 years' time, whereas it took all of human history up until the late 1800s to add the first billion. And the United Nations they put out projections every couple of years for population in the later part of this century. And the new population projections, for the last 3 or 4 versions of these, they've actually increased their projections because some of the assumptions that they make about fertility decline are not really coming true. So I think the latest projection for 2100 is 11.2 billion people by the end of the century.
There are some countries, I guess Japan, Spain, Germany, the native population is actually reducing. I mean, is the death rate actually greater than the birth rate there now?
In some countries it is, yeah. In some countries in Europe and Japan, I think you mentioned, it is actually reducing.
Now, but then you have countries like Russia where the birth rate has gotten so low the government is actually paying people to have kids. I mean, do humans in general, do you find, Alicia, have issues with not having kids or not having a great number of kids or something?
Well, yeah, I think that there's been a lot of attention paid to population aging, but I think the much bigger demographic story that your listeners should be aware of is that 99% of population growth this century is going to happen in less developed countries. And it's very, very, there's a lot of focus on what can we do to alleviate poverty, but not much understanding that with rapid population growth, when population's growing faster than economic development, it's nearly impossible for these countries to be able to provide for their people. So, I mean, basic services like health, education, infrastructure, if they're already at such a deficit as the low-income countries are, it's going to be an incredible challenge. In fact, some people think impossible for these countries to develop with that kind of growth rate. So that's the focus that I'd like more people to have.
If there is such a challenge then for the less developed countries themselves to provide for all these people, I can imagine great pressures within the family unit as well, a difficulty feeding all the children, clothing all the children, housing all the children. So why are the fertility rates still so high, particularly in Africa?
Well, that's another good question, Jeffrey. I think for those of us, and I'm sure most of your listeners have enjoyed regular access to good contraception, backed up with access to safe abortion, I think it's hard to imagine or sort of to realize that large families are the default position through all of human history, and without really consistent, correct use of family planning, then people living in a heterosexual couple will just sort of default to a large family. If we take the case of the average American woman wants two children, she'll spend about 5 years of her life either trying to get pregnant or breastfeeding, in which case she's not really able to get pregnant. But she'll spend 30 years trying to avoid pregnancy. And so that's a long time to use something correctly and consistently. It's 3 decades of her life. So I think a lot of people ask me why are poor people having such large families, and it has to do with, you know, there are many, many factors, but one of the factors is just that it happens naturally, and these are people who already are sort of neglected and overlooked by society. So with all the range of different health services that they need, family planning is amongst that, and they just aren't getting it.
Alicia Graves is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about population growth in the world and how to slow that growth, maybe even arrest it, particularly with an eye toward environmental issues, including global warming. She works at Venture Strategies for Health and Development at the OASIS Initiative at the University of California, Berkeley. You can join us on the Exchange. Your thoughts about population growth and its impacts on the environment, 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I can imagine there's a bit of a trick in talking about a bit of sensitivity, I should say, in talking about this in cultures where large families are revered. It's a sign of status to have a lot of kids in some cultures, isn't it?
Absolutely. This is the case. The OASIS Initiative is looking at the Sahel region of Africa, which is an ecological zone. It's basically the southern strip of the Sahara Desert. Sahel means shore in Arabic, so it's like the southern shore of the desert. And it passes through countries from Senegal and Mauritania in the west all the way across to Ethiopia and Eritrea. We're working mostly in Niger, in northern Nigeria, where many people are Hausa. And in their culture, like in a lot of sub-Saharan African cultures, there's still a huge respect that's garnered on women who have a lot of children. And so, yes, there are a lot of cultural factors to take into account.
All right. So let's talk about the broader worldview of fertility and population growth, particularly as it relates to environmental issues. It seems like I know the Sierra Club got into a major internal fight several years ago in talking about immigration as potentially an issue for environmental issues. So population itself seems to be something I get the sense environmental groups approach with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah, it's interesting. Again, I think it's taken a real swing from the 60s and 70s. I read so many reports about environment, even about women's rights, that are afraid to mention population altogether. And I think the message that I want people to understand is that family planning is not telling people what to do. The idea of population control is very bothersome to me because it's about exerting an outside force on people and their fertility. There are, even in the Sahel, we were just talking about Niger and northern Nigeria, in those countries there are 2 to 3 times as many women who want to either space or stop having children but aren't using family planning than there are those women who are using it. So we call that having an unmet need, women who say they don't want to get pregnant right now but aren't using family planning. And so this is the opportunity, and this is where I think environmentalists, women's rights advocates, certainly people concerned with the climate, should understand that population is a factor that's amenable to change while we uphold women's basic rights. So that's basic rights to determine the size of her family. It also has to do with girls' rights to get educated, because when adolescent girls are educated, they tend to have fewer children. They get married and start bearing children later, and they're better able to negotiate family planning with their partner, but also with the health system.
I want to pull a couple of parts together here. We mentioned that you're involved with the co-founder of the OASIS Initiative. OASIS stands for Organizing to Advance Solutions in the Sahel, which is that strip of the Southern Sahara you talked about. You mentioned that more women who want to space out their children or at least regulate their fertility are not using family planning. What's the usual barrier?
There are, unfortunately, a host of barriers. From economic, which I think is very important in the United States, physical barriers like getting, you know, if you're a rural woman, and in the Sahel is the most rural part of the world, about 80% of people are in rural areas. So there are the distances to cover, again, economic, the cost of getting there, opportunity cost of not working in the field that day. There are medical barriers across sub-Saharan Africa and parts of Asia. There's a lot of bias in the medical community, so they think that certain methods aren't appropriate for women who haven't yet had a certain number of children. So there are these strange rules that the woman needs to be actively menstruating when she shows up so that they can rule out a pregnancy, whereas there are plenty of other ways to rule out pregnancy. So there are a series, unfortunately, a host of barriers that contribute. And in parts of the world, a very important barrier is that women's autonomy. They don't have the right to decide on many different types of household decisions, including about fertility, whether they have sex, and whether they contracept. And then, of course, in the case where a woman has an unintended pregnancy, there's often it's very difficult to access timely and safe abortion.
Alicia Graves is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about population and pressure on the planet. This is a conversation you're more than welcome to join. Your thoughts, your observations, welcome at 800-838-3760 on the phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Here is Nicole in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hello, good morning. Thank you so much for bringing up this very important topic, which has receded into the background for the past years for some reason, along with felling forests, which seems to be going on the less there is of something, the more quickly it seems to get consumed. And it's just a combination of using up all our resources and having too many human beings on the planet, and it just seems that it becomes the worse it gets, the more the conversation recedes into the background, because human beings just aren't willing to change their habits. And of course, the countries are, our third world countries want to become like the first world countries, but on the other hand, it's not possible. There aren't the resources anymore because they've been consumed so terribly quickly. And there's no respect for the earth, actually. So that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you, Nicole. Appreciate that. Some thoughts back, Alicia?
I think she made some good points. And I would say that I'm glad that I'm having the chance to talk about this. One of the there's some evidence that in high-consuming countries like the U.S., high-emitting countries, family planning is actually the most cost-effective way to reduce emissions, and it's very simple because the concept of carbon footprint, I think many people are familiar with. So, by averting an unintended pregnancy, it's hard to think about somebody who's not here, but we're basically reducing the future population, and so again, I would promote family planning as a really effective, cost-effective way to reduce emissions.
Email from Mike in Medford. He says, it seems based on water availability, we bypassed overpopulation a while ago. Only 30% of China's land is usable for food, he says. India is going to surpass China's population, yet they can barely make a dent in feeding, housing, and environmental degradation. These two countries alone will tax the world's food system and water access. How do you see this playing out? That from Mike in Medford.
Yeah, I try to remain optimistic. I'm less familiar with India and China, but in the Sahel, there is real current resource scarcity. And I think, you know, you brought up the case of the Green Revolution, and as Mike mentions, India. There's a quote from Norman Borlaug that I refer to often. He, of course, is the father of the Green Revolution and helped avoid that mass starvation in India that was predicted in the population bomb. He won the Nobel Prize for that, and when he and in his acceptance speech, he said, "There can be no permanent progress in the battle against hunger until the agencies that fight for increased food production and those that fight for population control unite in a common effort. Fighting alone, they may win temporary skirmishes, but united, they can win a decisive and lasting victory to provide food and other amenities of a progressive civilization for the benefit of all mankind." So I said earlier, I don't like the term population control, but you get the idea. I mean, he realized that, yes, he had basically bought time for human beings, and we really need to come together, people who are working for women's rights, voluntary family planning, girls' education. This is all part of an environmental solution.
Is education the key? I mean, it's been said often that you teach a woman enough about birth control and the population growth will decline. Is that fair?
I don't think it's the key alone. I think it's part of it. And, you know, a more educated person is just as likely to have, I mean, just as able to have as many children. So it has to be coupled with good access to family planning.
Okay. And where can people get a look at the work you're doing at the Oasis Institute?
Thanks, Jeffrey. It's oasisinitiative.berkeley.edu.
Okay. oasisinitiative.berkeley.edu. Okay. Alicia Graves is at the Oasis Initiative at UC Berkeley, the co-founder of that. She's also with Venture Strategies for Health and Development, engaged in working on population issues around the world. Alicia, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Have a great day.
You too.